Hello friends, we are doing this subject on international marketing. I am Professor Ashish Hathi, who is going to take you through this subject. We are on chapter 5. Chapter 5 is on international marketing entry strategy. As the name suggests, we will learn about various aspects of selecting a market before entering, and then we will learn about different market entry strategies that is available to you and how can you tap the potential. So going forward, to give you some perspective, essentially a selection of an international marketing requires a specific approach. Approach essentially has two aspects to be considered. There are major aspects in terms of which market to enter. So that is number one. Second is there any barrier? Is there any challenges when you decide to enter this market? The market that you decide to enter, do you face any barrier? Do you think there are any natural challenges that you will face? So after determining the possible potential, you decide to enter. But on entry, do you get an idea as to what is the potential that you are going to tap and how will you maximize the tapping of the potential? You should get larger share, in other words. So how will you do that? And challenges of tapping the potential, there are many hurdles. The barriers, as I said, there could be legal hurdles, there could be regulatory issues, multi-window approvals you may require to start, and political environmental upheavals in the country's political environment may cause sudden instability. You may lose even your investments where the military has taken over, coup, as they say. Ability to continue. Success is definitely not a guaranteed this thing, despite very good market assessments. So key point to enter while you identify the market. The first thing, as we said, is that you need to identify the market and then you need to decide the right way to enter. So first point, essentially it is a series of this 7 steps that one needs to take. Starts with the evaluation of the market that you will do it, how potential the market is, whether international marketing tapping is required, whether it is worthwhile, what you are venturing into, whether that itself is worthwhile. Second is complete evaluation. So there are evaluation frameworks available. Here what has been told to you is a PESTEL analysis, but beyond PESTEL, also things like geographic, cultural, socioeconomic factors one need to understand. How will you enter? So that's a market entry strategy. What could be your right entry strategy? Kind of investment, the time that you will have to spend and the efforts that you will require behind making a success. And then do you have the required resources? So obviously, time also should be there. Money is a prime thing do you have? And people and their efforts, will you be able to bring in so much? And capability to withstand the shocks. The market, when you are in business, business is all about upheavals, up and down. So will you be able to withstand that? So that needs to be really understood. So after the basic introduction, we get into understanding the entire process, the process and factors in market selection. This is a 5-6 stage process. You have to go through this 6 steps before you really can take a judicious decisions. We will be of course discussing them in subsequent slide, but it starts with objective to enter the market, evaluating the market completely, a demographic and physical environmental evaluations that you carry out. You look at various tariffs, customs and regulations. Will it be any barrier? Political environment, and then finally socio-cultural compatibility. So we will get this one by one. So the first step under the process, defining the objective to enter any international market. So obviously, as it suggests, you need to know what is a core reason, core purpose, core objective. What are you going to achieve after entering that market? Revenue and profit is an obvious one, but beyond that, whether it is a growth momentum, whether it is getting a scale built up, whether competitive differentiation you want to create, whether you have a better technology and you want to establish to the world. So there may be other core objectives that one need to really understand. Every company will have its own laid down blueprint. There is an example of a Walmart which has been given out here. Walmart defines the market. Walmart defines the market as retail ready market, retail market. It has its own parametric evaluation. India is still not in their high consideration set. though they entered through Airtel Bharti Group as such. So these decisions, are taken based on their internal framework, where they really determine how to go about. So what is that objective that you want to achieve after you enter the market? Second is, what are the parametric evaluation that you will carry out? So every firm will have its own judicious way of approaching. Here are the few indicative list that has been given to you. You obviously have to start with giving a justification why you think you want to go international, why you think you need specific countries to enter, etc. And in your justification, essentially the due diligence, what have you observed? What are the inferences? What is the statistics that is revealing? Is there is anything, etc.? What is the kind of a demand? Which other products are moving there? So much about the market, the product movements in that country, kind of competitive aspects. What is the depth of opportunity? Will it give you a reward year after year, or it is a short-lived opportunity that you are trying to capture? What kind of a distribution channel available to you? Will you have to develop any channel? What is the supply chain support, that is the back end for distributing your goods, available to you? Kind of a competition, severity of the competition, who is your competitor, whether they are the big companies with fat pockets or they are the normal business entrepreneurs, etc. Other aspects like, what is the proximity to your home country, because it matters in case of needed support. Besides the culture, besides the stability of that country, population, that the kind of a composition of the population, whether young adult, etc. Macro perspective, what is the economic growth, what is the industrialization, those kind of macro perspective vis-a-vis micro perspective, which could be industry related, which could be a particular product related, etc. So you will get into micro perspective also. The third aspect is demographic evaluation and the physical environment. Demographic is all about knowing the population's perspective in terms of a gender divide, in terms of age, in terms of male female literacy, income level, SEC classification, urban rural classification, poverty composition, versus middle class, lower class, higher middle, rich people. So those kind of various demographic, socio-cultural, this thing all will come under demographic aspects that talks to you a lot about. And then from there you can determine the market sink, and you see that the market has a familiarity for you, and then the attractiveness. So these are the size, relevance, growth, etc. That is what I've just spoken to you. The fourth is, now the crucial part starts. You have to now understand what is the tariff structure, customs and other regulatory aspects. We have studied in earlier chapter the type of barriers. So you have a tariff as a barrier, you have non-tariff barrier, you have hidden barriers, etc. So all aspects, the custom procedures and various other regulatory framework, you need to really understand. Impact of foreign exchange fluctuation, what is that, whether that country's currency is stronger than your country, and what is the fluctuation does it observe. So those aspects are even technical barriers we have discussed, technical barriers to trade also we have discussed. Is there any standards and practices being insisted upon? So those aspects. So this is what a very crucial section, though very crucial step that one need to undertake. Continuing to understand the process and factors in market selection, which is the first phase of your entry-level approach to the international market. Fifth is evaluating the political environment. So best framework is a PESTEL framework. You know what PESTEL framework is all about. So where you start with the political, economical, social, technological, legal and environmental assessments, and you convert those findings into SWOT analysis, where you determine what is the strengths that you have, the weakness, which opportunity you can leverage, and what is the threat that you need to defend about. So these aspects will really enable you the environment scan. Then comes the socio-cultural compatibility. Moving from the PESTEL, that is the fifth stage, you will be able to derive it, and using it like a framework like Hofstede, and there are a few others, you will be able to know more about cultural composition, which is how the society, what is the diversity, what are the prevailing culture, the beliefs and subcultures, etc. Linguistic challenges, if any. India, like has so many languages itself. Orientation towards change, acceptance of a newer ways of doing things, newer products, etc. Who influences their thought? Who influences their behavior, etc.? Who drives the change? So those aspects will really enable to you. So we understood the aspects that is needed. That is the first process step, which is, how do you go about selecting your market? So I will just take a back steps just for a purpose of it. We started with this. The first thing is defining the objective to enter into the international market. Second is evaluating the market shortlisted. Third is evaluating the demographic and physical environment. Fourth is understanding the tariffs, etc. And those areas. The fifth is political scenario and environment. And the sixth is socio-cultural compatibility. So this is the process aspects that we have seen. Now we get into what you call the segmentation of the market. Segmentation is not a very new subject for many of you, I'm sure. As you have reached the level of understanding in international marketing, I'm sure you have a basics exposure. I will quickly get into basic understanding. You slice your entire population into some identifiable characteristics based homogeneous group. From that homogeneous group, you cannot, serve every group. You will decide which is a group that you want to serve. So that group is identified as a segment. From that, you will select certain segments to market your product. That's your targeting. And based on the targeting, you will then align your marketing mix. So this being clear, we enter into different types of segmentation one can do. Here are the five essential parametric assessments or the segmentation approach that one can have. It starts with the geographic, followed by demographic, then the socio-economic, cultural factors, political. There are many other ways to also segment the market, but for the basic learner, this awareness about this five is really enough. So we can try to get quick idea about this. Geographic segmentation, essentially the geography is taken as your criteria for evolution. The belief here is people residing in similar geography have similar traits, similar culture, similar buying behaviors, etc. Though you may wonder, is it true? Because there is a poverty, there are people of different classes, different cultures staying, but broadly this is the base on which it is done. It can be done on city, state, continents also, like from the international marketing perspective, continents and the regions and cluster of countries, etc. So you see European countries or African countries, etc. There can be other parametric aspects related to the geographic segmentation. So for example, McDonald's realized while entering India that it will be better to move with the wage only perspective to gather larger population attracted towards your product. So that's a essential element. It is easy to determine. The geographic segmentation is preferred because it is easy to determine. Primary assumption is that connected through geographic similarities, they have a similar buying behavior. That is what I already discussed. They prefer certain things, because it's a collective exposure. Then comes the challenge of a geographic segmentation. Is a variation you may require. Okay, two different markets may have a different needs. So within your geography, you have geographic segmentation. Say you take Europe as a geographic segmentation. Europe has many other divides. Now within each divides, the entire perspective may change, and they have two different needs. There's a different people. So that care has to be taken when you do your geographic segmentation. Coming to demographic segmentation, to do with the population and the composition of the population. So they are based on demographic aspects such as age, gender, sex, etc. You may be basically aware about many products have a relevance to this demographic composition. So some products, and therefore you see company develop many products like the Surf HUL, have a Surf Excel, they have a Wheel as a detergent also, which is an economy. They have a Rin Tikia for further economical product to wash the clothes. So that goes into respectively the poor class, the middle class, and the higher middle and above class. So that's also a reason why you have, for example, HUL, further example, have a soaps coming from say like days of Hammam to Rexona to Lux to Dove, etc. And they if you look at the price band anywhere between 10-20 rupees to 100 and above, so see the reason that is because then there are people based on the income, which is a demographic factor, and they want to attract people with different income groups. They have a different perspective towards their likes and dislikes, etc. Baby diapers. Now, baby diapers boom in India is always there. But today you see the adult diapers are also entering because the old age population, because life expectancy has grown up. So people are living longer than the average and they do have a problem in those areas. So baby diapers only, not only that, adult diapers market is also growing. So that's on the demographic. Many scenarios, users and influencers could be different. In a demographic, this thing, the need of an hour, that is what you have to see is who is primary, what is that that matters to your segmentation. Okay, while you do that, there are many multiple scenarios that operate. So within the demographic, this thing, if you take the composition of a culture, income and caste, totally many sects will happen, you know, so many divisions will happen. So how will you go about? That's a challenge. This kind of segmentation, especially, you know, age helps you to market customer lifestyle specific products. Now, if you know the age composition, you will be able to, properly market your age related. Teenagers have a different likes, mid age have a different likes, old age people have different likes, different needs, etc. So that is possible once you do the demographic segmentation. Then comes the socioeconomic segmentation. It's on the composition of the society. It overall looks at how the society is kind of composed out there. Social and economic development gives a good insight about the potential, the you know, the likely growth momentum that market is going to witness, etc. Because the composition of the society on a very positive, this thing with the forward-looking aspects, with the believer in the innovation, with the acceptance of a new product easily, etc., do not resist change, etc., those kind of things will open up market for new products. So economic development will boost manufacturing in such countries which is socially forward looking, you know, and economic developments will then get a boost of its own type. Social developments will give indicators regarding the shift and the preferences. However, the lifestyle changes is also part of social changes. Like in India, joint family or Hindu undivided family was the norm. Then it became nuclear family, neo-nuclear family. Now husband works in one city, wife works in the other city. So kids are in boarding school in different city. Even that is happening. So you see that change will be visible to you if you do the socio-economic approach to segmentation. These aspects also looks at evaluating the lifestyle. What is the change in the lifestyle? What people believe, you know, that what the personality. Now today, my father and probably my forefather thought it is okay to look normal, which is not the case with me and maybe definitely not with my kids, you know. They want to really look smart. That's what they feel. So that's a change, that their choices are therefore different vis-a-vis my choice. Suitable for lifestyle products, grooming products and all are now, you know, so much, you know, in every house. And I have never seen a grooming product necessarily when I was into college days, etc. Or neither my mother or father using it. Today, our house is full of different tables for each one of us. So see the change. So cultural segmentation, it's a culture of the country, definitely has a sound impact because that is where we are born and brought up. The disparity between men and women, the disparity between literacy, etc., what is the significance given to equality of male, female, etc., has a definitive impact. Today now the youth is given a freedom. Parents do not interfere in their choices, etc. Earlier, even till college, I believe, my choices were made by my parents. But today, beyond class 6 or 8, they decide their choices, you know. So how this shift has happened? Money, pocket money and all their savings versus their, you know, willingness to spend. Earlier, I used to think myself because the money used to be demanded whenever I wanted. It was not that I had a regular supply of pocket money so that I could save and, you know, spend the way I wanted. So all those things, you know, living with parents, that's also culture. Or like living separately, that's also, so this aspects brings various things. Now, cultural shift is also that I know that, you know, I might have to post-retirement be on my own still. Okay, my kid may separate and will live his own life and enjoy his life. So preparing for the retirement planning, so the product related to that will come into my perspective. So then political segmentation, they are essentially based on domestic market factors, how the stable the economy, how the stable the political environment is, and political stability impacts many areas. Macro factors, they impact micro factors. Stable government, you know, the vis-a-vis a progressive government, etc., gives growth momentum. That growth momentum will be beneficial to you. It enables organizations to decide nature of presence. So that's very important. Depending on the political decision, suppose the market is there, but you see that political upheavals keep happening, then you may not do direct investment. You will do indirect international marketing out there. So you will probably just deal with the agents and distributors out there. So that's on the political side. So we enter into now a very important section, market entry strategies. This section, what I mean to say, the market entry strategies, not the 5.4, because this number keeps changing. Market entry strategies, you will have the suffix, you know, to that, is a very important section, heart of this particular chapter. First is the joint venture. Now the market entry, when you say, it has two aspects. X-axis if you take, X perimeter, then that's a risk. And the Y-axis if you take, the reward that you are looking at. Now, every decision has a relevance with the risk that you want to take. Just to give you one example, if you want a low risk and you want a reasonable profit, you will only go with the agent and distributor. But you are willing to take maximum risk, but you want reward also. Good. Then you will go and have your own setup. You will have a manufacturing facility. You will set up a complete operation out there. So that's with that, you know, we enter into understanding joint venture. Joint venture is kind of a balanced strategy where no doubt the risk being there of a moderate nature, revenue also is moderately attractive. And here what happens, two firms, each with in the different countries, having their own skill sets, having their own age. Somebody might have a good process, secrets of manufacturing, etc. And the fund, the other partner have a lend and a capacity to run the show, that he knows the market well. They will come together and form a new entity, joint venture, to develop the business there. International companies infuses fund, yani. So fund management comes in, you have to invest certain level of fund, you know, so that they say 51% generally. If you want control in the company, if you do not want control in the host country's company, then you may have a 49% or you may have a slightly less also. So that's a call that between the two partners happens, vis-a-vis also the legal rule. What is the government policy defines that? For example, in India, for a number of years, the media, the insurance sector, etc., where people were not allowed more than 26%, later it became 49%. Now they are allowed to invest and take control. So you see many takeovers happening. So that's why it allows home country, party to immediate access to the market. Advantage is when two partners, when two joint venturers party come together, you believe in the local partner that he will exploit the market to the best of his ability. So, but you have a ready access to the market then made available. Of course, the time and the gap in really making the joint venture start selling, that gap is there. New company's name in most cases, and it symbolizes definitely the new name originates. So like Tata has joint venture with Docomo. So when they entered, Docomo entered India along with Tata, it was Tata Docomo. Okay, so that's how it goes about. Further, based on the government regulation policies, and stakes are allowed to a certain extent. So in most industries, government has kept the bar of 49% so that, you know, there is a control that rests with the Indian management. But a few companies like insurance, etc., was 26, later it became 49, and now it is increased to 74%. So foreign partner can not only invest and take charge, the party with which the majority stakes holds the core management functions, okay? And government may change these regulatory norms as the time goes by. However, so in recent past, stakes in defense project was also now allowed. So defense projects. So government may introduce new norms or a new sector within the allowable limit of joint ventures. So defense sector is now open. Aviation is open to joint ventures. You see that Singapore Airline and Tata Group and the Vistara has come up, etc. So that's what. More on the joint venture. To protect the interest of the certain industry, government has limited the stake. Earlier, media was 26%. Now 100% is allowed. So we'll discuss this. So I will get straight on to the advantages. How does a joint venture help? risk is reduced. Both parties share the risk. Okay, local partner can tap the market better. The person who's already in the domestic or the foreign market, he knows that market better. You have an access to various existing network. Maybe you tie up with a person who already have his network or infrastructure. So that you are not, kind of spending, gestation period can be left low, and developmental activity will be faster. Local partner is aware of various rules, regulation, legal aspects, and therefore he is able to manage the local risk better. And technology absorption and transfer is easy and in the joint venture, because the person who owns the technology and is transferring, he also knows that he has a stake in the organization and then he is going to get a reward for it. So that's the joint venture. So after completely understanding what the joint venture is all about, let's get into understanding certain salient other aspects, which is joint venture failure reasons. So it could be wrong strategy. You have entered into joint venture, but the strategy that has been adopted to enter and subsequently develop the market were not right. Incompatible partners. Actually, that should be the first one. Partner with whom you entered, you were expecting certain amount of energy, certain amount of investment, certain amount of infrastructure, certain amount of utilization of his own resources, etc. That doesn't happen. He might have projected himself to be aware of market, but then it turns out to be not so aware and competent about it. So those are the things. Inequitable, unrealistic deals. So you have entered into a deal which later becomes a burden. You are not able to fulfill, or he is not able to fulfill what has been agreed upon. Weak management. If your stake is low, you are not able to put a right management person out there. Even the team that he has acquired or other partner may not be very sound. So trying to gain indirect control many times after the joint venture is formed through a different means, indirect means, the other partner tries to take a complete working control of the organization. And you will come to know, and that leads to the distrust and mistrust between each. Not reaching envisaged goal. That's a very critical and primary reason. You started with certain goals in mind. You do not reach despite various efforts. There may be a political interference which starts, or political turmoil in that country. Army took over or whatever, or some party has changed, or other party who has just come is hostile towards you or whatever, or hostile towards your country as the case may be, and various cultural and socio-economic factors that will lead to problem in your joint venture. To make the joint venture work, there are certain essential requirements. Management must be compatible. Compatibility, when you say, they should have the right skill, they should have the right experience, they should have right attitude, mindset, etc. And they should really sync with each and every partner and the stakeholders within the organization. Environment that you create should be forward-looking, should be success-driven. Okay, you must give required flexibility and you must cooperate also. You cannot be every time demanding, even if you have a higher stake. And therefore the managerial control vis-a-vis the other partner, you cannot be in the role of being only just the asking guy and not supporting, not cooperating, etc. Partner to have a good and proven track record, go with the partner who has established that, he has a success track record, he has done similar joint venture in for the other industries, etc. And that industries are running properly, etc. Good knowledge about market, the competition, the product and the field realities, etc., the distribution network realities. Manage regulations and law. So he or she, that the partner is able to understand the complete legality and complete land of the law, tax laws, direct laws, various other things, business laws, corporate laws, etc., that needs to be managed. And above all, is there a way by which each partner adds value? So that addition of a value every time is a constant that will ensure the success of the joint venture. So with that, joint venture is one entry, market entry strategy. We enter into second one, mergers and acquisitions. Now, mergers and acquisitions, if you put in the risk pedestal, it is slightly higher than the joint venture. Here, it is like you are literally entering on your own, kind of, okay, but has his own good reward. both words essentially go together. You will wonder why, though both are supposed to be distinctly different. So let's take that look. This both options have their own advantages, I have told you, and limitations. Merger, what do you mean merger? As the word also suggests, synonym is joining. It is combination, combining, two companies coming together and forming a new company. You will ask, what is difference vis-a-vis joint venture? Joint venture is no doubt two partners are coming together and they are forming a totally new company. Here, two companies each complement each other's requirement, and they then lay hands on together. So then that's a merger. Nobody loses the kind of acquisition essentially, or the control and all. They will together sustain themselves and continue the business. On the other hand, acquisition means you gulp the other country, other company literally. You acquire a majority stake. That other company's name and brand, maybe brand is written, but that name, company gets diluted, company gets fully absorbed into your company. However, you get various advantages, as you see. In merger, both companies have their own share subject to applicable government norms, which is prevailing in that country. In acquisition, as you see, home country's firm buys the entire stake, I have told you. And the company there in the foreign market who's acquired by you has to, their name disappears. You may have the brand name, you have eligibility to use brand name. Allows you, the advantage of acquisition is every assets, infrastructure, people, etc. are your asset now. So you are able to quickly utilize the assets for your business, so that is the advantage. The network that they have set up, branches, the warehouses or whatever, so all is yours now because you have acquired. India, in a way, is a very favorite discussion for mergers and acquisitions. Many foreign countries are directly coming here, either merging or taking over Indian companies. Now India has turned around and India is also going abroad and trying to merge or take over foreign countries to expand their business. Okay, so that's a courageous thing. You see, Tata has set the example both in the steel industry, then Tata has taken Jaguar, Land Rover, etc., brands, etc., in foreign countries. Airtel acquired Zen Telecom in Africa. So both sides, that is possible. Our country is going abroad and acquiring and merging, or foreign investors are coming here, foreign companies are coming to India and either merging or acquiring the Indian companies. Continuing this, according to McKinsey, is a very renowned consulting firm. How can you make this entire strategy work for you? So they have given certain principal points and we will get into understanding them. First point is improving target company's performance. You have to, the sustenance or the success depends on your ability to improve the target company's performance. The company that you are merged with or you have acquired, company post acquisition looks at, company post acquisition. So essentially it is about the acquisition, how to make your acquisition successful. So post acquisition, company must help that company, the one whom you have acquired, so set the a higher rate of growth, set the revenue growth, target, very exciting, get into the normalization or reduction of the cost, etc. Improve the margin not only for you, but margin also for the network, etc. So this is how you get into making everyone look at you so that they start coming forward and support you. Remove excess capacity from the industry. So now what happens when the industry matures? Essentially during the growth stage of various industries, many players come in. Then what happens? They either work at an average load. So company on an average, every manufacturer is working at 60% or 70% capacity utilization, etc. When mergers or acquisitions kind of thing happen, what happens? One company goes out from the steam, so to say. And as a result, sick plant either can be shut down. What that company which has been who has acquired this company can look at it, and if that company's operation is overall sick and you do not require additional capacity, you can work through your own manufacturing unit, then you pull out that or shut down that plant, etc., or you rationalize the capacity. So that eventually benefits the industry in general, so that others also can look forward to improve their utilization. Third is accelerate the market access. The biggest acquisition advantage is you get a direct access to the market. The bigger company, when acquires a small company, when they are not, you know, do not have the access to their product, can reach that faster. So by acquiring a company into the target multinational market, target national market, you are able to get a quick access to the market and available network and infrastructure. So that's a big advantage. Get technology faster and economically. And so here what happens sometimes, to have the impactful existence, you need a technology, and thus you need a acquisition to happen. So when acquisition happens, the company who's acquired will have a better technology, so that better technology will be infused in the company which was taken over. So technology infusion will make things work better and overall give you the economies of scale, the one who acquired that company. Pick winners early and then help them develop. So that's what you see now, these acquisitions and all is happening in the startup success stories or unicorns, etc. What you are hearing is that somebody is able to visualize that who is the one who's going to make the mark as in the going forward. So better might as well invest in them, better to acquire them in an early stage, so that you are able to give the growth momentum, you are able to yourself probably protect your interest or faster your economic development, faster your organization's development story. So these are some of the principles that McKinsey has laid down for the acquisition to be successful. There are a few more. Acquisition strategy requires a disciplined approach. Disciplined approach by management. It essentially requires three-dimension approach by the management. Should look at these three aspects very closely. Make investment early. So acquisition, if it has to happen, your ability should be able to find out the unicorns, or your ability to find, you know, the very progressive company in an early stage, so that you acquire them at a lower value, you know. So that's one, this thing. Second is need to make the multiple bets. Acquisition strategy de facto tells you that despite all the assessment, due diligence, you may not be successful every time. So be ready to have failures accepted. So you may make three acquisition efforts, two may fail, one will you will succeed, but that one will probably recoup the loss that you have incurred. Need the skill and patience to nurture the business. Need you acquired company has into that stage because of their inabilities, their inefficiencies, their lack of capital. Now, just because you have taken it over, it doesn't mean that they will turn around overnight. So you will have to have that time given to them, have patience to get results from the team. Okay, so that's the three core managerial perspective that McKinsey suggests for helping acquisitions succeed. So we covered another, this thing, mergers and acquisitions. Thank you very much.